ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवत गीता दी सी इस्ट Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 9, Text 13. Mahatmanas tumang partha.
Mahatmanas tumang partha.
Daiving prakritim ashritaha.
Daiving prakritim ashritaha.
Bhajantyananya manaso.
Bhajantyananya manaso.
Nyatva bhutadim avyayam.
Nyatva bhutadim avyayam.
This verse is a description of persons who are known as Mahatmas, great personalities. Here, in this chapter, Krishna also says that Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu Name Dveshu Stina Priyaha. Krishna says, I am equal to everyone. I don't particularly favor anyone or disfavor anyone. Krishna is neutral, but then he goes on to say, "Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham." But those who worship me, Krishna says, I'm especially partial to them. So this means that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of whom all living beings are parts and parcels, mamai vangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. This means that Krishna, he is not intrinsically favoring any party over any other. There is one major religious grouping in the world who believe that by virtue of birth they are God's chosen people. But we don't find any such thing in Krishna's teachings. Krishna favors those who like him. Yeyata mang prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajami aham. He reciprocates with everyone, and he's willing to accept anyone. It's not that he favors anyone because of their birth in a particular family or any such thing. Actually, there may be that also, because one who is born in the family of Vaishnavas, well, they get some special opportunity, no doubt. But that's also, they're born in a family of Vaishnavas due to some previous devotional activity. Shuchi nam shrimatam gehe yoga brashto bijayate. One who has taken up yoga but who falls from the path gets the opportunity to be born in a family of pious people in future. So Krishna says that everyone's intrinsically equal, but at the same time, here in this verse, which we're discussing today, Krishna distinguishes some persons as great souls, which means that others are lesser. And Krishna speaks about them just two verses prior to this, in which he thoroughly condemns persons who condemn him. He says, Avajananti mang mudha. You know the verse? Manushim tanamashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Krishna says, fools, mudha, deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. So some people are fools and some are great personalities. And the The difference between them is that the fools deride Krishna. Of course, not every fool derides Krishna, some simply ignore him. But those who are very big dumkoffs, they don't only ignore Krishna, but they actually blaspheme him. And Krishna is a problem for the fools if they come to know of him. If they don't know of him, then they don't blaspheme him. But if they know of him, then they are forced to either accept him or reject him. Or, as goes on in a lot of what is called Hinduism, to kind of accept him or actually avoid him while pretending to accept him. For instance, they will worship Krishna, but at the same time, they will make some strange philosophy about him, that Krishna is some manifestation of some greater force. Srila Prabhupada often commented on the statement in the Bhagavad Gita commentary of, is an English commentary, of a prominent philosopher who became President of India, in which he stated that it is not to the person Krishna that we have to surrender, but the unborn eternal within Krishna. In other words, he's trying to differentiate between Krishna and something within Krishna, as if Krishna is just some covering over some higher essence. So this is one way of seeming to praise Krishna, but at the same time undermining him, because Krishna says here, he is Bhuta Maheshwaram. And again, Gyatva Bhutadim Avyayam, everything in this world is created and destroyed, as Krishna has just stated here in these verses, just before this. So everything in this world is created and destroyed, but Krishna is eternal. Krishna is never created or destroyed. Atheists, they like to put the question, who created God? As if they, and they think that they've checkmated the theists by asking this question. But the very definition of God is an uncreated being who is eternal. The very definition of God is eternal. And you may say, well, how can any being exist without being created? Everything we see has got some creation. But then you get into the logical fallacy of infinite regression. And they say, well, who created God? Well, the creator of God. Then who created the creator of God? And who created the creator of the creator of God? And you just go, it's a logical fallacy. So it's something unimaginable. And the other possible alternative, if we want to take it from our own teeny brain point of view, logical point of view, is that God is eternal, and actually all the souls are eternal, and even material nature in one sense is eternal, although bhutva bhutva praliyate, it comes into being again and is destroyed again and again, but at least in seed form it's always, even when unmanifest, is existing in potential form within Mahavishnu. So, in one sense, matter is eternal, not that the forms are eternal. There won't always be an England, for instance. There's a famous song, at least among English people, there'll always be an England. They were a little doubtful in the early 1940s, but God saved England. I guess we shouldn't talk about that here in Germany. But anyway, there won't always be an England, because there will come a time when the whole universe will burn up and that England's green and pleasant land, that's from another song about England by an Englishman, surprisingly. England's green and pleasant land will all burn in the fire of devastation. So nothing in the form will not last. All the form, these bodies that we have, they'll all also get thrown into the fire. There's a time when the body which we go to so much effort to maintain, at one point it'll just be thrown in the fire, finished. So the forms in this material world, they're not permanent, but material nature as a whole, it goes on existing. That's one law of science, or it's accepted as an axiomatic law of science, that energy, conservation of energy. So matter always exists. Sometimes it's manifest, sometimes not in manifest. Spirit always exists. Well, that matter always exists. Anyway, scientific theories. Big Bang. What was before the Big Bang? It's nothing. In the beginning was nothing. Scientists, at least most of them, they say in the beginning was nothing. And then there was a Big Bang. And the Bible says in the beginning was Logos, the Word. And Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha, everything comes from me. In the beginning was Krishna. There's no beginning, actually. It all goes round and round in time. So, foolish people, they do not accept Krishna. And great persons, what is the qualification to be a great person? To jump higher than someone else? To jump further than someone else? To win a Nobel Prize, for instance, the present president of the United States of America is a Nobel Peace Prize winner for all his great efforts for peace, like preparing to kill a few Syrians. They got fed up of killing Iraqis and now they're going to kill Syrians instead. And of course all the millions of cows that they kill and chickens every day. So, what do you need to be a great person? Krishna says here, simply one has to bhajantyananya manasaha, to worship Krishna wholeheartedly, knowing him to be the origin of everything. And although he's the origin of everything, he brings everything into being. He himself is avyaya. He is inexhaustible. He doesn't become depleted or any lesser by generating everything. So this is the qualification to be a great person. And the qualification to be a rascal, fool, actually the word used here is fool. Srila Prabhupada often used the word rascal along with fool. They're almost synonymous, not exactly, but almost. Fool means stupid, and rascal means wicked. But one who is stupid, they must act in a wrong way. So, the foolishness of the fools here, that means a willing foolishness. Anyone can be foolish, just due to human weakness. But to willingly reject on Krishna, or even not to take an interest in Krishna, that shows a rascal mentality. And therefore they come up with foolish ideas. Foolish ideas means what? Foolish means it's not correct. And particularly they come up with various theories to justify their avoidance of Krishna, which the theories are foolish, and the very fact that they're attached to them means that they are rascals, as Krishna explains in... I read first the 13th verse of this chapter, then the 11th, and the one in between is verse number 12, Mogha sha mogha karmano mogha jnana vichetasaha rakshasim asurim chaiva. What's the last line? Prakritim mohinim shitaha moghasha. Their hopes, all their hopes are baffled. All their desires, they're baffled. We shall conquer, we shall enjoy, we shall show ourselves to be great, but everything is destroyed in course of time. Even not necessarily in course of time, maybe very, even their hope may not be fulfilled at all. Morga karmana, morga gya, their activities of their activities and their intellectual endeavors are all baffled because they are vijetasaha. Their consciousness is bewildered. It's going in the wrong way. Rakshasim, asurim chaiva. Their whole outlook is wicked and wrong. Therefore, they become bewildered. Because they're attracted to wrong ideas and everything just goes wrong. So, here Krishna says that those who are my devotees, they are great souls, and those who are not, they are murha, fool, or duratma, rascal. These are almost synonymous terms. There are many similar terms. Similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse which is well known to followers of Srila Prabhupada because he often quoted it. Yasyasti bhakti bhagavatya kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate suraha. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahanguna manoratena asati dhavato bahihi. Yasyasti bhakti bhagavatya. Those who have unflinching devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, akinchana, bhagavatya kinchana. That gives the same meaning as in this verse. Yasyastya bhakti bhagavatya kinchana. That means the same as bhajantya nanya manaso. They worship wholeheartedly. If they have nothing else to do, nothing else to think of, nothing else to consider. So, yes, yasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana sarvai, they become imbued, or they naturally have all the great qualities of godly people. And for those who are not devotees of Hari, you may say, well, I'm a devotee of Sai Baba, or I'm a devotee of all the gods, or I'm devoted to my country, or I'm devoted to humanity. But those who are not devoted to Krishna, then where are their great qualities? They're simply traveling on mental chariots. They're running on the chariot of they're running on the mental platform. So there are many people in this world who are advertised as being very great personalities for their great contributions to humanity and for instance, this Mother Teresa of Calcutta was advertised as what a great person. She helped all these poor people. In Germany also, she's considered a great saint, is it? Yeah? And they don't care about her so much. There is, the propaganda reaches here also. Then Dalai Lama, he's considered, what a great person. Of course, the previous Pope didn't like him much, but the present Pope seems to like everybody. They don't care much about the Pope. Well, this is South Germany. It's supposed to be Catholic down here, right? So, what a great person. He goes around and talks about peace everywhere. You know, Buddhism, compassion, love, and they talk a lot about peace. Compassion and love and all these things. But according to Gita and Bhagavatam, they're not Mahatmas. You may say they have some qualities. Nice, someone's talking about compassion and peace and love, because the world's pretty rough, isn't it? It's nice that someone's talking about compassion and peace and love instead of just talking about making money and expanding the armies and making more bombs and expanding our political influence, managing the economy, keeping out the immigrants, and all this kind of thing. So it's nice someone speaking about compassion and peace and love. However, there's a big problem with just talking about compassion and peace and love if we don't actually know who is Krishna. Here we see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about worship of himself as being the actual characteristic of a great person. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai. Actual compassion and love can be on the basis of the soul. This is the whole message of Bhagavad Gita. Because Arjuna, he was feeling compassion and love on the basis of bodily relationships. And it sounded very good. And up to the present day, there are many people who can't understand what kind of holy book is this, the Bhagavad Gita, in which Arjuna, he didn't want to fight and he didn't want to kill. And in this holy book, which is supposed to be the most sacred book of the Hindus, whatever a Hindu is, it's an undefined, undefinable term, the whole essence of the Gita is that Krishna convinces Arjuna, who wanted to be a pacifist, to be violent and to kill. So up to the present time, people have a lot of problems with that. Many people have problems with that. But Krishna's whole point is that Arjuna was acting, he wanted to act on the sentimental platform, on the platform of the body, not on the platform of reality. And Krishna pointed out that anyway, the body has to die. The soul cannot die. So in one sense, you cannot kill anybody. And in the other sense, if you think that the person is the body, well, anyway, the body has to die. Now, as Srila Prabhupada points out in one of his purports there, this does not ratify wanton killing. It's not that, well, everyone's going to die anyway, so press the button. Why set off all the nuclear missiles and just wipe them out anyway? That doesn't justify that. But to base one's whole morality on the body is foolishness. We see that Arjuna had been in the position of killing many times prior to the Battle of Kurukshetra, which was about to take place. And he had actually killed. That was his duty. He was trained for that. He was praised for that. He had a great reputation for that. He had killed many thousands of humans, animals, Nivata Kavachas, they're one class of demons. I think there are 24,000 of them. He killed them all. So Arjuna killed, but when he was confronted with the situation in which he had to kill persons who were very dear to him personally, then he hesitated and he started speaking all this, what seemed to be high philosophy, which Krishna didn't accept it as high philosophy, because it was based on bodily considerations. So, we have to understand clearly what is what? What is reality? Then we can speak of morality. Otherwise, what is right and what is wrong, it can be very difficult to understand. In some cultures around the world, it was considered quite acceptable to kill humans and eat them. You may say, well, that was pretty low culture. But we see that's coming again in the Western world, the idea of not necessarily eating people, but killing them. Old people, they can't do any work, and what's the use of them? They simply, we have to pay taxes to maintain them. Just, you know, a little injection, doesn't hurt. Finished. What's the harm? In fact, it's good. It's less of a burden. Yeah, for those of us who are getting old. One time they might, you never know, within 10 years or so, they may come along and say, okay, you may think, well, that doesn't, so that's, no, who would agree with that? But then, who would have thought that in a civilized country like Germany, the policy of killing masses of people because of they were thought to be detrimental to the interest of the country, that was accepted by the majority population, not just accepted as a theory, but it was state policy, famously. And even now, although we consider ourselves to be very civilized, there's a daily Holocaust going on. Not only, all over the world, millions of animals, birds are killed every day. They're only animals. Why? Only, but they suffer also. So that they don't suffer. If you come with a knife to kill a cow, they won't be happy. They suffer. They're also living beings. So we have this warped morality in which we think it's wrong to kill humans, but it's right to kill it. Well, you should kill them humanely. That's all. Whatever that means. There are laws that you can kill them humanely. Chickens, they don't have any protection under law. Cows and pigs, they have some protection, that they're supposed to be killed humanely. The whole abortion question. Now abortion has become considered normal. In America, there's the ongoing debate, abortion, pro-life and pro-choice. And still in Ireland, although it may not last very long, abortion is illegal. Otherwise, in countries like Germany, no one thinks so. Is it an issue here? I don't think it's much. Is it? Is there much opposition to it? Just goes on. No one cares much. In America, there's a strong anti-abortion lobby. Somehow or other, America has a strong Christian population, although Christianity, to a large extent, died out in Western Europe. So, is it right or is it wrong? And who's to say? And what is it? And from what age is it? What age is it acceptable? Three after the first trimester, second trimester. What at what point does a lump of flesh become a human? According to those who are pro-abortion, only when it comes out of the womb, and even they started now. Postnatal abortions. In other words, if it pops out and you suddenly decide, well, we didn't want it after all, then it's still okay to kill it. That's coming up now. So all kinds of theories, but they can't know because they don't know what is life. Because they're fools, they don't have knowledge. So what is right and what is wrong, we can only understand if We know what are the actual facts of reality. So Krishna, he said to Arjuna, you don't know what are the, you're talking on the mundane platform without knowledge of reality. So we should know what is the actual fact. Dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma, or rules governing what is correct and what is not correct, they are given by God. Now, various people will say, yes, that's right, the rules are given by God in the Bible. And some people will say, in the Quran. And other people will have different ideas about what is given by God. And others will say, well, we didn't see any God, so we don't believe in any God. But those who do not accept that there is an ultimate regulatory authority, then they must be manoratena siti dhavato bihi. They're on the mental platform. They cannot come to any conclusion about what should be done and what should not be done. Pravritting cha nivritting cha janana vidura sora. Those who do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done, they are called demons, and they will come to wrong conclusions about what is to be done and what is not to be done. They must come to wrong conclusions. And therefore they will create chaos in the world. So, the first thing we should, therefore Bhagavad Gita teaches us first things first. If we are to understand what is reality, what is right, what is wrong, there's some basic things we need to understand first. They're very big questions. What is right? What is wrong? Is there God? Is there not God? The first thing we should understand, what is the difference between spirit and matter? Who are we? Who am I? Who are you? Most people think we are the body. That is a mistake, because the body is temporary. According to materialists, we exist as long as the body exists. Life is just a result of a combination of matter. But that is not true. And actually, even by the scientific method, there is much evidence of reincarnation. There have been many studies done. But because people who call themselves scientific but who are actually just atheistic or materialistic, by materialistic I mean people who believe that there is nothing more than matter, there is no such entity as spirit. The word materialist is often thought to mean someone who's interested in lots of money and big houses and big cars and fancy jewelry and that's one meaning. And another meaning of materialist is one who ascribes to the philosophy of materialism, that nothing exists except matter. There's no spiritual dimension. So those who are materialists, even though there is much plausible evidence of reincarnation, even from the neutral academic point of view, they don't like to accept it. So the first thing we should understand, we are not the body. Srila Prabhupada, he repeatedly stressed this point, because everyone in material existence is under the illusion that we are the body. And from intimately connected with that illusion is the desire to enjoy the body. And this desire to enjoy the body, which means to enjoy the senses, that is jnana vijnana nashanam. Jahi shatru mahabaho jnana vijnana nashanam. This kama, material desire, the desire to enjoy the senses, it destroys even theoretical knowledge. We can't even theoretically understand we're not the body if we're trying to enjoy it. And there's no, and vijnana, there's no question of realization of spiritual realization if we are cultivating material desires. So, therefore, in any actual serious sadhana or spiritual sadhana for spiritual realization, there must be sense control. Yoga indriya sangyamya. Yoga begins with control, bringing the senses under control. Otherwise, with uncontrolled senses, no one can understand spiritual subject matter. One may be a very brilliant scientist, but spiritual realization will remain far away. So the first thing to know is that we're not the body. And if we understand this, then our whole perspective on life changes. In materialistic society, people are just interested in enjoying the, first of all, maintaining the body. And once that's looked after, then enjoying the body and the mind, the body and the mind, the mundane body and the mundane mind. But when we understand that we are eternal and that we're suffering birth after birth due to identifying with this body and trying to enjoy this body, then our whole perspective changes. So that's the first thing to understand. Arjuna didn't understand that even materially, if Bhishma and Drona were to be killed in the battle, that was glorious for them. Even if you take it on the material platform, it's far better for a Kshatriya to die in battle than to die in a comfortable bed at home. Sukhina Kshatriya Partha Labhante Yudham Idrisham. The Kshatriyas, they become happy when they get the chance to fight, because Swagadaram Apavritam, the doors of heaven are open to them. So that's only on the material platform, understanding reincarnation. But then even beyond that, there is getting free from birth and death and going to the spiritual world. And for that we have to understand Krishna. We are spiritual. Krishna is the Supreme Spirit. There are many people who profess to understand that we're not the body, but still they deny Krishna. Unless we understand that we're not the body, unless we at least theoretically accept that, then there's no question of real spiritual understanding. But even if we accept that we are not the body, still we can reject Krishna. Or still we can avoid Krishna. There are many Mayavadis, as I was just quoting this, Dr. Radha Krishnan. It is not Krishna that we have to think of, but the unborn eternal within Krishna. Whatever that means, because nowhere in Shastra is there any reference anywhere to any unborn eternal within Krishna, but something he made up with his vast Oxford University intelligence. Yeah. If you want to be self-realized, there are a few things to beware of. One of them is going to Oxford University and becoming a mundane scholar. So, we are not the body. We are eternal spiritual beings. We have our eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna, who is the Supreme Spirit. All these points are clearly spelled out in Bhagavad Gita. So, simply this point we have to understand. I'm not the body, and Krishna's too Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what is the relationship? Then, Jiveshwarupai Krishna Nityadas. The Jiva, the eternal living being, is the eternal servant of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna Tartashta Shakti Bheda Bhed Prakash. The Jiva is the marginal energy of Krishna manifested as being different from and non-different from Krishna. So that's maybe not so easy to understand, but not so difficult either. Tathasta means we have the independence to surrender to Krishna or not surrender to Krishna. Bhedabed means that we are one in quality with Krishna. Krishna is spiritual, means Satchidananda, eternal, conscious, and blissful. We are also Satchidananda, eternal, conscious, and blissful. But still, Krishna is supreme, and we are subordinate, and we have a relationship of servant to master. That relationship is our constitutional position, Jiva Shwarup. If we act in that position, then we are known as Mahatma, a great personality. And if we don't act in that position, then we are simply foolish and misguided. So any talk of love, forgiveness, compassion, mercy, harmony, universal cosmic brotherhood, and so on, without Krishna, it's impossible. It sounds nice, but it's impossible. Srila Prabhupada, he once noted when people were talking of brotherhood of man, brotherhood of mankind. Nowadays, you'd have to say brotherhood and sisterhood of mankind, but in the early 1970s, you could get away with saying brotherhood. When Srila Prabhupada said, if there's going to be brotherhood, well, you have to recognize the Father. How can there be brotherhood without a Father? There must be. Brother means we're all connected via the Father. But persons who don't want to surrender to Krishna, but who have some idea of being nice and being good, their ideas of being nice and being good, they actually compound the problem of our material existence. They don't help us at all. If we talk about love and peace and compassion without knowing our relationship with Krishna, and that we have to surrender to Krishna, then we simply compound the problem. That means that people think, oh, we're making the world a better place, but we can't make the world a better place. Because this world is a prison house. So, it's meant for punishment. Oh, maybe you can make it a better place. Instead of beating the prisoners with iron bars, now we'll beat them with gold bars. We made it a more prestigious prison, better prison. Is it an improvement? Well, the prisoners they may have a international prisoners convention, and then prisoners from one prison will come and say, well, in our prison they beat us with gold bars, and in your prison they only beat you with iron bars, so we are more prestigious than you. Is it any help? Still you have to suffer. So this idea of improving the world while forgetting Krishna, it actually misleads people from the real point, which is to surrender to Krishna. We're not meant to live in this world anyway. Now, we're not against improving the world. We also agree that, yes, we should cut the number of carbon emissions, or actually you can just stop it altogether, more or less. We don't really need motor cars. Yes, why pollute? There's some simple things which could be done to make the world a better place, so to speak. But even if you do cut all the carbon emissions and close the ozone hole and clean all the garbage out of the oceans and so on, still people have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. If we teach people to surrender to Krishna, then they won't be so mad after sense gratification that they need all this highly artificial society. Automatically all the pollution will stop. What are the problems? What do people see as the problems of the world? They can all be solved by Krishna consciousness, because the real problem, if we get to the root of it, is people's depraved mentality, which comes from thinking that we have to enjoy the body. The goal of life is to enjoy the body. Let us enjoy the body. We only live once, so let's make the most of it. So all this talk of love, peace, compassion, universal tolerance, it's all just increasing the carbon dioxide content in the atmosphere. It's just some extra breath. There's how many peace conferences? How many interfaith conferences have they been in which everyone makes a resolution? Yes, there should be world peace, and it makes no difference whatsoever. And at the conference, they'll have lunch. Well, you can choose beef or chicken. The rascals, they're all killing the animals and they're talking of peace. They're so stupid, they don't see the connection between the piece of meat on their plate and the fact that we have the mentality to go and kill so many humans. Because they're ignorant, foolish. They don't want to accept Krishna's words. The beginning of Krishna consciousness is to accept Krishna's words, what he says. So we're trying to propagate this Krishna consciousness for the good of the world, for the good of it. This is actual compassion. To try to help the body, that example is given, that if we simply save the shirt of a drowning man, but with what is the value? We have to save the man. So that's a material example. So if we simply save the body, we're trying to save the body, but we don't save the soul, what is the value? Of course, if we save the drowning man, then we can save the shirt also. But the important point is the in this example is the body. So we save the soul, and it's not that we're callous to the needs of the body. That should also be looked after. But important is the soul. So this is an important distinction. Who is a great person? In the next verse, Krishna says, Satatam kirtayanto maṁ yatantascha duravrataha namasyantascha maṁ bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. The Mahatmas, they're always engaged in glorifying Krishna. And they're very seriously engaged in worshipping Krishna, bowing down to Krishna, constantly worshipping Him. So that's what we're trying to propagate. It may seem like a few people in a big city, and who cares about Hare Krishna? Well, Krishna cares. We should try to propagate this and give people this knowledge. People are suffering from lack of Krishna consciousness. And then when someone comes along and talks of love and peace, or some so-called guru comes from India and hugs everybody, and they think, oh, how wonderful. I got hugged. I waited 3 hours in line and then I got a hug. How wonderful. But getting hugged by some so-called guru doesn't stop the problems of birth, death, old age and disease. It may give some feeling, oh, how nice, but it's like, to use another example from Nazi Germany, playing the orchestra while the prisoners are going to the gas chamber. You know that? That while the prisoners at Auschwitz and all these places, actually I said in Poland, they were taken to the gas chamber, there was a live orchestra playing, live concert, for some strange reason, I don't know why. Someone thought they would. So, what's the value to a dying man to have a nice concert? If someone's sentenced to death, tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock he will be shot dead, sentenced to death, or gas chamber, or electric chair, or an injection, or whatever. And tonight, you can have any pleasure you like, as long as you don't go outside the cell. You can, here's a few pictures of different prostitutes, you can choose any one you like, and any nice food you'd like to eat. And what's he going to enjoy? Knowing that tomorrow morning, I have to die. So what enjoyment is there in this material world? Kim sukam martya dhaminam. Repeatedly this question, rhetorical question, comes up in the Bhagavatam. Kim sukam martya dhaminam. What happiness is there in a place of death? We have to die again and again and again. What pleasure can there possibly be there? It's foolishness to think that there can be any pleasure in this material world. So real compassion is to give people the knowledge by which they can come to the actual platform of happiness. That is the platform of Krishna consciousness. Anything else is just a bluff. Simply a bluff. However great such welfare workers and charitable workers and so-called saints and compassionate people may seem to be, they're simply bluffing others. They might have some feeling of being nice, but they can't really help others. Helping others, first we have to give people the knowledge by which they can understand, people can understand what is our actual position. So, Hare Krishna, any question about this? Is it taboo in Germany to speak about all these things, Nazis and all this? Is it? It's not. Okay, I didn't know. I wouldn't have cared that much even if it was, but now I know. It's amazing how it's still very much prominent in the consciousness of the Western world. I don't know about in Germany, but it's almost like it happened yesterday, the way they talk about it. Despite the fact that they're going on with their daily holocaust of chickens, pigs, goats, cows, sheep. They say there's nothing. No one even thinks there's anything wrong with it. I mean, there are some people, vegetarian movements and this and that. But most people, they don't think there's anything wrong with it. I didn't know. I was raised in jolly old beef-eating England, and I didn't have any idea there's anything wrong with eating meat. It's just normal, that's all. Everyone did it. But they don't think. Now at least some people are thinking that it's wrong. Yeah. Okay, thank you for saying that. That's become a formality that at the end of class you have to say that. You don't say that. Okay, all right. It's become like a ritual in our movement to say that. Thank you for the one of class. Okay, all right.
And my question is also, how to understand that we are not the body, but how can we also understand nicely how we're not the mind?
How can we understand we're not the body, and how can we understand we're not the mind?
Focus on how we are not the mind.
We are not the mind. Well, how do we understand we're not the body, and how can we? That you say is relatively easy to understand, but it's not so easy to understand that we're not the mind. Well, Krishna teaches us in Bhagavad Gita that we're not the body, giving the example that the body is always changing, but the person remains the same. So the mind is also changing, even though the person stays the same. Now we may say, well, the mind, okay, that changes at every moment. So one moment you're feeling happy, the next moment you're feeling distressed, and then one moment you're feeling tired, and the next moment you're feeling invigorated. Apart from that, there is a whole mental outlook which changes throughout life. A child's mentality is different to that of a youth, which is different to that of an older person. And as Krishna explains this all in Bhagavad Gita, actually, how the mind, not only is the mind changing, but the mind The mental state takes us from body to body. Utkramantang stitang vapi bhunjanam vagunanvitam vimura nanupashyanti. No, that wasn't the verse. That comes after that. Shrotam chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva cha adhishtaya manas chaiva vishayam upasevate. Krishna says that everyone in every birth, we get a sense of seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing, all grouped around the mind by which we try to enjoy sense objects. So the mind is not the pure Atma. The mind is the interface between the false egoism by which the soul considers himself to be the body and mind, and on the platform of the mind we try to enjoy the senses. So that is not me. Now I have a human mind. Later I will have I could have a pig mind, a dog mind, a crow mind, a demigod mind, a worm in stool mind. We get different mentalities according to the vishayanupasevate, according to how we try to enjoy our senses in the human life. So we are not the mind. Otherwise, I would be a human and the pig would be a pig. The Schwein would be a Schwein, but the Schwein is not a Schwein. Even the Schwein is a pure devotee of Krishna. It's amazing, isn't it, if we think about it? You don't see pigs in Munich, probably. Only in the supermarket, already packaged. Probably in Germany you don't see them, and they're all locked away in pig torturing factories. Huh? In India you see them running around here and there. It's not a very high birth. It's a horrible situation to be a pig. Maybe you have wild pigs in the forests here, is it, in Bayern? Is it? Dangerous. Are they dangerous? Can be. So we're not the mind. It's maybe a little more difficult to understand that we're not the body, because the body is more gross, more immediately accessible to our senses. No one has ever seen a mind, or we can't see the mind. We can't touch it. We can't taste it. We can't smell it. We can't feel it. We can't hear it. Yet it is the center of all the senses. All the senses function through the mind and for the satisfaction of the mind. And the mind feels pain and pleasure. It's a very interesting subject which should be explored. Vedic psychology. Sohotra Maharaj made a start on that. It's a huge topic which is discussed in even what's in Bhagavad Gita. Even though the Bhagavad Gita is a short book and it doesn't only the nature of the mind is in one sense you could say the nature of the mind is a central theme to Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna wanted to change Arjuna's mind. But the very important topics of how the mind, the mental situation, carries us from body to body, and how there are the enemies, the enemy of the mind, especially karma, material desire, and then how we have to elevate ourselves by the mind and not degrade ourselves. So even though Bhagavad Gita covers many topics apart from the mind, what it says about the mind is extremely significant. And of course we have in Srimad Bhagavatam throughout Bhagavatam, especially in the Jarabharat section, there's discussion of the mind. And in the Upanishads, and Vedanta Sutra and commentaries. There's much discussion of the mind. It should be done, an alternative psychology as a reply to the psychology in the Western world, the modern psychology, which, to a large degree, began with that Sigmund Freud, his psychoanalysis. And his whole outlook is that we have desire, and we should not suppress it, we should fulfill it. So the Vedic psychology is that we have desire, but that, Freud said that desire is intrinsic to our being, and Vedic psychology is divided into two sections. There's the Vaishnava and the impersonalist. So the impersonalists, they want to extinguish desire. And the Vaishnavas, they want to purify desire. But desire is central. Indriyani parani ahur indriyebhya parang manaha manasastu para buddhe yo buddhe paratastu saha. Srila Prabhupada, following several Vaishnava acharyas, translates this verse as saying that superior to the mind, indriyani pyani ahur indriyebhya pra, is the mind. Superior to the senses is the mind. Superior to the senses is the intelligence. Superior to the intelligence is the soul. Ramanuja acharya, he takes saha in this verse to mean desire. So he translates it, or he renders it as superior to the senses is the mind, superior to the mind is the intelligence, and superior to the intelligence is desire. Which is contextual, actually, because that whole section is about karma. So the desire, and we can see in material consciousness that the intelligence is not really intelligence at all, because it's subordinate to desire. Our intelligence is utilized for fulfilling material desires. It's not really intelligent at all. So it's a major topic. Who wants to dedicate their life to Vedic psychology? It's a great topic. If I had a life ahead of me, I might do it. There's so many things to do. A lot of work to do in many fields, intellectual fields. Who will study psychology from a completely different, absolutely completely different perspective? The whole point that the consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Completely different approach. Yeah.
Krishna consciousness means revolution.
Krishna consciousness means revolution. Yes, that's correct. Because our original consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Now we're 180 degrees away from that. So revolution means to come back to the original point, to our original consciousness, Krishna consciousness.
And especially in the West, we live in an atmosphere which is not very revolutionary.
In the West, we live in an atmosphere which is not very revolutionary. Yeah, that's true. But you know, no one's really revolutionary. Even this, the icon of revolution in the Western world, this, what was his name? Che Guevara. What's their revolution? They instead of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in a capitalist system, they eat, sleep, mate, and defend in a communist system. That's all. So their revolution, it's not really a revolution. There have been so many revolutions, French Revolution, American Revolution, and it all ends up in birth, death, old age, and disease anyway. revolutionary atmosphere, political revolution. During the 60s and 70s, 60s means from what, 65 onwards till about 1975, there was the hippie movement in which, I mean, it's still going on, but it's not really the same. The idea of being different. But the thing is, they're all being different in the same way. They all had long hair and baggy clothes. They're being different, they just became another cult. And then after that, there were the punks, and they wanted to do something different. But they're all different in the same way also, so they're not that different. And even if you have green and purple hair, still your body has to die. It's all parabhavastavadabodhajatayavannijigyasitaatmatattvam. It's all living and dying in ignorance because we don't inquire. Defeated in the purpose of life because we don't inquire into the nature of the self. But if there is an atmosphere of revolution, then maybe people are willing to try some different things. Maybe not. Some revolutionaries were very much against Srila Prabhupada. In Australia, when Prabhupada went there, he spoke in some university, and there were some very obnoxious people. They wouldn't let Prabhupada speak. They were heckling him, and someone called out, are you the latest propaganda organ from the CIA to stop the real revolution? Have you seen that? There's a video recording of that. And then Madhudvisha Maharaj, Prabhupada said, you speak. And he said, well, if you think that all the problems come from America, that's your problem, he said. And some people clapped, and it was just wild. They're so revolutionary, they didn't want to listen to Prabhupada at all. So revolution, yes, this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to be revolutionary, but not rabble, not this rabble French revolution, guillotine kind of revolution, but raising people to a higher culture, higher understanding, not this killing revolution that we have to kill everyone and not that, raise people to higher consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada, he did speak in militaristic terms. He spoke about overcoming the foolish civilization, defeat the rascal theories. That's revolutionary mood, yeah. Yeah. I discussed that in this book on strongly speaking in Srila Prabhupada's service. Did you see that book? Yeah. Yeah, I discuss in there how Srila Prabhupada inculcated practically a militaristic mood. He spoke in militaristic metaphors. But he didn't recommend killing as such. He said that if you kill, you will be killed. In Kali Yuga, that won't work. You have to kill the demoniac mentality. He wasn't against, he said that there has to be, if there's a war and you have to fight, and he wasn't against capital punishment. But as a policy for our movement, the policy for our movement is to spread Krishna consciousness by Sankirtan. We have our ISKCON bullets, Gulab Jamuns. They make the opposition. You fill them up with prasadam, and then they can't do anything to them. They can't move. Finish them off. So, another kind of revolution. Yoga, yeah, beginning of yoga is to control the senses.
Connection with the Gulabjamans. Does it mean we are automatically always safe when we only accept Krishna
prasadam? Are we automatically always safe when we only take Krishna prasadam? Well, that's a very good start. If we make the vow only to take Krishna prasadam, that's a very good start in controlling the tongue, which is the beginning of controlling all the senses. And actually, it's a fact that those who vow only to take Krishna prasadam, you can go past an ice cream shop and not be attracted. But those who make the habit, I mean, there are some devotees, so we're told, who go into the ice cream shop. And once you start doing that, then your senses will always be agitated. But if you make the vow only to take Krishna prasadam, then you're not attracted to anything else. But one has to also come to a better stage of not seeing Krishna prasad as an object of my enjoyment. The beginning is to take only Krishna prasadam, but then we also have to think that we have to serve prasadam. Serve prasad means we honor prasadam as Krishna's mercy upon us, so that I can get nourishment for the body, so that I can continue to serve Krishna. But if we take Krishna's prasadam as something for me to enjoy, then we can't properly honor prasadam. But prasadam is very enjoyable, no doubt. But we should... How should we enjoy then? We should think, Shena Amrita Pau Radha Krishna Gunaga. Krishna has given us this nectarian foodstuff, prasadam. We should honor that, glorifying Radha and Krishna. Not forgetting Radha and Krishna. This is their mercy on us.
In connection with Ananda Krishna Prabhu's question about the mind and realizing that we're not the mind.
Realizing that we're not the mind.
So, should we make an extraneous effort on meditating upon that we are not the mind, or should we just follow the process?
Meditating that we're not the mind, well, we should hear the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and try to understand that. And at the same time, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravinda Yoho, we should make the determination to serve Krishna, place our mind in Krishna's lotus feet, and now make the activity of the mind is Sankalpa Vikalpa, to accept something and reject something. So, Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Varjanam, to accept everything in Krishna's that's favorable for serving Krishna and to reject everything that's not favorable. And on this basis, then when we engage the mind in Krishna's service, then automatically all the senses are engaged. And that's realization. When our whole being is engaged in Krishna's service, then the mind doesn't go anywhere else. We can also theoretically understand. Let's give that as Srila Prabhupada, he often quoted that verse. What is that? Yadavadhi mama cheta krishna padaravinda navanavarasa dhaman yuntam. What is it? Astim asit. Tadavadhi bhata nari sangame smaryamani bhavati mukha vikara sushtu nishthivanamcha. This verse that is, since I've been engaged in the loving service of Krishna, taking pleasure in that, whenever I think of my previous life, when I used to enjoy with so many women, my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. So, commenting on this, Srila Prabhupada said that it may be that even one is engaged in the service of Krishna, but still thoughts come in the mind of sense enjoyment from because its previous activity is there. But because we have now... experiencing an ever new rasa, nava nava rasa, in the service of Krishna, then we feel disgusted by that thought of sensual pleasure. So realization means that even if some bad thought comes, which it will do, We should understand that's not me, that's just the mind. Some thought comes, let me leave this Krishna consciousness movement and become a professional boxer. For instance, I mean, there are millions of things you can do in the material world. That's just something which popped into my mind. So, some crazy thoughts may, all kinds of thoughts may come in the mind. But you understand, that's not me. I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. I'm not this mind chattering on, blah, 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 blah. Professional boxer. Now, why don't you become a heroin addict? No, why don't you just get a house and a job and be normal and eat sauerkraut and sausages and just be normal? Mind will offer so many things. It's just chatter, chatter. Just don't listen to it. You're not the mind. Just turn it, just neglect it, that's all. Instead of entering into a conversation with the mind, well, professional boxer, yeah, well, I'm 56 years old and I wouldn't even qualify for the welterweight and it's not really a very good... And anyway, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. Yeah, but, well, maybe you could be in your next life. If you desire it enough, maybe Krishna will give you a big, strong body. How about that? Instead of entering into a conversation, it's nonsense. Just forget it. Just don't even bother listening. Turn off the mind. It'll go on, blah, 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 chattering away. But just, I'm not the mind. Not me. Hmm.
But also in Bhagavad Gita, you get the state of mind.
What is that?
In Bhagavad Gita, it is said the state of mind during the time of death.
State of mind at the time of death determines our next birth.
What if the mind is chattering?
What if the mind is chattering? Well, you better chant your rounds now. So the mind's not chattering at the time of death. That's why we do sadhana, isn't it? Chattering means just going on talking with nothing very serious. So yeah, we have to do sadhana now. If you think, well, I have so many things to do now, but I'll do sadhana later when I'm old. But guess what? When you're old, so much of your attention just goes on the body. Because the body is just a mess. Even to walk up the stairs can be very difficult. And there's so many things go wrong with the body. And very difficult. If one is not practiced, it's very difficult to have the strength and the determination in that debilitated condition to do very serious sadhana. So better do it now. Better start now. And Krishna helps those who are serious. That's true. Krishna won't neglect you. I served Krishna all my life. I was trying very hard, but somehow at the time of death, I thought of a meat pie. So I had to come back as a butcher. Now, Krishna's not so cruel. And if we do serve Krishna at the time of death, if we do serve, then hopefully, then devotees will be there chanting kirtan and all this kind of thing, helping us to remember Krishna. And even then, Krishna will help us. We should have that faith. Krishna will help us. What is that? Nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgatin tata gacchati. For one who's a yogi, who's tried hard, he doesn't attain a durgati. He doesn't go down. Krishna looks after him. Yes, sir.
So if the mind goes in the
with the bad thoughts, or which is something.
If the mind goes towards bad thoughts.
Or unsolicited thoughts, then okay, we can ignore. But I just want to know that the good thoughts, the affection towards the Lord, that also comes from mind?
The affection to the Lord. Does that come from the mind? That doesn't come from Maya, that comes from Krishna's internal potency. We're reading this verse. Mahatmanastumang Partha Daiving Prakriti Mahashritaha. That Daivi Prakriti, that's Radharani. Thoughts of Krishna come from Krishna's internal potency, not from the external potency. So, Hare Krishna.